Welcome to Exploration 1, Module 1. Okay. The first thing I'm going to do is, and I'm going to do things a little bit differently this year than I did previously, but I'm going to cover a few things, which is only going to take a few minutes, and then we're going to get into what is in the actual chapter notes. Now, when I ask a question that says, has anybody read this chapter yet, I am only referring to people who are actually taking this course. If you are sandbagging, as we say in the ham and radio industry, then you are exempt. I'm just going to move somebody down into the lecture theatre. There we are. Sorry, Catherine, I've just moved you down into the lecture theatre. The lecture has just started. If you want to do that in future, it's arrow down to the lecture theatre in the tree view and press enter. Sorry about that, but usually the first week we do that. Okay. So, yes, has anybody read Chapter 1 yet?
Yes, I've looked through it myself.
Okay, it's
can
not...
the sandbagger?
Yeah, the sandbaggers can talk, by all means. I don't mean that as an offensive thing, but if you're sandbagging on like a radio channel, you're listening on the side. So don't ever think that I think you look like a sandbagger or anything. It's just a term.
No problem. Yes, I read the chapter.
Okay, no worries. It's a pretty simple one, all things considered. We are going to go through it anyway because there are things I want to talk about in the actual chapter that I think I can expand on. Well, I mean, I've been teaching this for a few years. I can at least stick a couple of labels on myself, even if they're likely to fall off. So we'll certainly talk about the base of this chapter. Now, this course is fairly... Well, first of all, actually, just let me put myself on autovox so that I'm not actually wearing my finger out by holding down the pause break key, and I will probably be a much happier individual. Okie dokie, that's better. Now, does everybody want to do an introduce everybody to everybody else thing, or does everybody not want to do that? Because it's really up to everybody. I mean, everybody else seems to be doing it. Do we want to do that very, very quickly before we get started so you know who your other classmates are?
Good to learn the voices.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. All right. Now, if you wanted to know who that was Brian, and he'll get to talk in a second. All right, so let's have a... and if you don't know what to say, that's okay. Think of something. Your name, who you are, and perhaps, well, maybe what you hope to achieve out of this course, or what you hope to achieve from the Academy generally. And first person off, or first cab off the rank, so to speak, is Amanda.
I'm Amanda. I live in upstate New York. This is my first time doing this kind of class, and I'm hoping to get some good job skills out of it. That's all.
Okie dokie, no worries at all. I think next down will be Brian, if my alphabetical order skills are working.
I just checked. Just to make sure, I thought it was too, but it is. I'm Brian Moore. I'm from basically Toronto, Canada, and I'm actually taking this course a second time because I got really insanely busy with work and things and didn't finish last time. I actually want to go for Cisco certification. Like, I intend to write exams and see what letters I can accumulate.
Okie dokie, and that is a worthwhile goal. And once you have set Exploration 1, you are actually qualified to attempt to take the entry-level network technician exam, which apparently gives you a bit of paper that people tend to like. Now, I don't think Dina's audio is working yet. Maybe it is. You can certainly try it, and if it works, then we'll hear from you. Otherwise, he's from South Africa and is up at some amazingly early time in the morning, which is incredible. I don't think I could do that. I'm not a morning person. But we'll move on briefly to Edward, your intro on a postage stamp for everyone, please.
All right. My name is Edward Alonzo. I'm from Northeast Arkansas, right on the Southeast Missouri border. My goal for this class is to be able to obtain more information about networking. I really enjoyed reading the first chapter. I thought it was quite interesting to really get into how the networks have really changed us. You know, we don't even think about it, how much it's changed us. And as it said, this course here is an example of us being able to do bigger and broader things because of networking. It's not strictly just computers, you know, a home network. It's all one big network, and it's allowed us to do so much more. So that's my goal.
Ah, fair enough. Hey, do I have to send you like a percentage of my wages now that you've actually managed to summarize a couple of the chapter objectives, Grin?
Nah, I won't hold you responsible.
Ah, jolly good. Okay, Catherine, and unless you've changed it, your default hotkey is control. Are you audible, and do you want to intro on a postage stamp for everyone?
I hope so. I'm Catherine from Rochester, New York. I'm an adaptive technology instructor at ABVI Goodwill in Rochester, and my goal is to obtain a CCNA certification.
Okie dokie. Excellent stuff. Okay, it's up to me, and I'm going to be unusual, and I am going to introduce myself this time. And because I'm the instructor, I get a really big postage stamp, just so that you guys know a little bit about me. My name, obviously, is Kerry Hoth, or at least that's what Ventrilo thinks it is. I'm 35. I've been working with computers since 1987, when my first computer was a Keynote XL, which is an Epson HX20 with a Symphonic speech board stuck on the left-hand side and some inbuilt word processing stuff. I was one of those kids who hated touch typing with a passion and really couldn't see the point of it. And every time I hit the letters AQZ, I would say, I hate typing, which didn't really help me learn it very quickly. They gave me a talking computer in 1987, and the rest is somewhat history. I am previous experience, I've done a whole lot of different things. I first got on the internet in 1993 with the Australian Public Access Network Association. Sorry, did somebody want to say something, or...?
Kerry, can you now hear me?
Yes, I can. It works. You can introduce yourself now. I'll even take a break if you want to tell everybody who you are and what your goals for the course are. But yes, you are audible.
I'm glad I managed to sort that one out. I'm Dina Dayal in Mudley, and I think just to make it a lot easier, people can just call me Dean. I am from South Africa. I live in the capital city, Pretoria, and it is just after 3 a.m. in the morning here. I have done A plus and N plus before, but due to very inaccessible exam venues in South Africa, I wasn't able to actually take the international exam. Although the local exam, you know, I scored 98% on both. So I hope to redo that because I've done that back in 2003.
Excellent. Excellent. And we wish you all the best with that, and I'm sure you'll do absolutely very well. And we do have a commitment from Pearson View and stuff that there are, the way they're redoing the exam centre stuff, they will be able to make that accessible, and they've said that they will be able to do that for us. Okay, so just finishing what I was saying, I got onto the internet, which we'll talk about in a little bit, in 1993 through the Australian Public Access Network Association over a 14.4K dial-up modem. Well, technically I had email before that. I had a copy of UUCP for DOS running off a 720K floppy, and I would log on after 10 at night when we had cheap phone rates and fetch down my email for the day and read my email and respond to it. First installation of Linux was March 1993, five and a quarter inch floppies and a serial cable was how we did that. I've done contract work, I've built computers, I've worked for local councils, I've hooked wireless networks together, I've built routing infrastructure, done a bit of voice over IP, quality of service, definitely some VoIP stuff, some Asterisk PBX stuff, plenty of Linux. And that's about me. I play harmonica, descant recorder, and I tend to enjoy things that involve technology, which is why I'm here teaching you guys. Back in 2002, I think it was, we were having a lecture, and my girlfriend, who was then to become my wife, who is now my ex-wife at the time, sort of stood up in the middle of one of Ian's lectures and said, "Why do you have to tell us all this garbage? I can't understand a word you are saying. Why can't Kerry just get up and do the lecture?" And Ian said, "Well, Kerry, do you think you can do a better job?" And I said, "Well, I'll give it a go." And the rest is history. Dean has fixed his audio, by the way, Grace. So
cool, sorry about that. I would have been here, but Kate wanted some help.
No, that's fine. Okay, where's up to? So that was 2002, and I worked with Curtin until 2006 on this project when I got lots of work and I left. And then at the end of 2006, they said, "Here's some money," and I came back. So that's me. Let's see. Do you want to briefly introduce yourself, Grace? Because you'll probably be hanging around the lectures. We're just
absolutely. We're just doing introductions. All right. I'm Grace King, or Hoth, whichever, depending on what you want. King's on my passport. I'll sign your certificate, King, but I'm really going for Hoth, and as soon as I can, I'm going to actually change that when immigration gets its stuff together and I get a new passport. Anyway, I am from Madison, Wisconsin, but I am now in Perth and hope to stay here. I've been working with the project since 2009. I am your enrollments site type of Cisco Netacad administrative person. So if you have problems with any of your Ventrilo accounts, Cisco accounts, any of that, you get in touch with me and I will try to fix them. And I am also the curriculum lead and instructor for ITE Essentials 1. So that's basically me. There you go. Better late than never.
This is a bit early for you, isn't it, Mr. Legg? And we'll wait for him to sort his audio out when he gets to that. Okay.
I forgot what my hotkey was.
There you are. You're back. That's your hotkey. Did it burn you?
Oh, it's too early in the morning to remember hotkeys.
Okay. Do you want to briefly introduce yourself? We're just doing introductions.
Oh, I hadn't prepared anything, but hi, everyone. I'm Chris. I'm supposed to be one of the local students, but I'll make it in one day. I've been working in IT for a couple of years, and got involved with Cisco in 2008, and have come back this year to do the exploration.
Okie dokie. And last but definitely not least, if you would like to introduce yourself for people's benefit, Pat. Oh, no, Randy's after you, sorry. But yeah, you're second last.
So you want me to go before Randy?
Yes, because that's how the alphabet goes, and it hasn't changed today, luckily. So, yes, you're
that would
before
be a
Randy.
Huge problem. Give it time. Hi, I'm Pat Fletcher, and I'm also a New Yorker from Buffalo, New York. I'm in this class right now trying to learn the advanced networking and also taking the other discovery class to kind of fill in the holes that I have in networking. So I'm just kind of sitting in right now. I won't be sweating it out like the rest of you, but I will be listening.
Well, don't worry, you'll do plenty of sweating in ITE1.
You're supposed Thanks, Grace. To be reassuring. Yeah, you're supposed to be reassuring, Grace. You're not supposed to scare them to death at lecture one.
Nah, she'll be fine.
It's just a challenge!
Pretty much. Okay, Randy, do you want to briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Randy Strunk, and I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Currently, I'm getting a degree in desktop support and taking exploration to help me with CCNA certification.
Excellent. Okay. A degree in desktop support. And here I was thinking that a lot of us had the third degree in desktop support, but obviously that's something different again. Okay. Now, what I'm first going to talk about is the basic course structure and the things that we'll be looking at doing and the tools and resources that you will have at your disposal to make those things happen. Exploration is a course that deals with the theoretical aspects of networking. So we look at how the protocols hook together, we look at how layered models work and why we use layered models, and we look at the TCP/IP model and the OSI reference model. Now, one of the things you're going to find about this course is that lots of things in this course require you to remember a certain base level of stuff. Now, if you're good at memorizing stuff, that's fine. If you're not, you're going to need to find methods to attach the information that you're given to a fairly large group of neurons so that it sticks. And there are ways of doing that. You can either do it with association, or you can do it with... just give me a sec, somebody's wandered in here.
It feels like there should be some on-hold music or something while we wait.
I know, right? Carrie used to do advertisements when for me when I was doing my courses, and somebody would walk in and I'd have to talk to them. So he'd like do these advertisements about, you know, doing your labs or taking your quizzes or whatever. It was pretty hilarious.
Are you looking to gain a certification in networking? CAVI might be the organization for you. That's right, with a series of targeted labs, incredibly complicated lectures, and a number of chapter exams, you'll have the letters CCNA after your name in no time. Okay, all right.
Who was it?
Alex has just come in, and we weren't sure whether he was coming in or not, and he said, well, you guys didn't email us anything, and we're like, but you told us you'd get in touch with us, so we were just having that discussion and going, well,
cool. I'm sorry I'm not there.
Bit of a mix-up, but he's all right. He's in here now, and we'll work it out, but yeah, he wasn't sure what he was doing this semester, so we hadn't emailed him. Okie dokie. Well, you guys can always talk amongst yourselves while I'm not talking. That's certainly something you can do. But all right. If you're going to memorize a whole stack of information, you need to be able to attach the information to neurons in your head in such a way that you will remember it. So how you do this is entirely up to you. Some people use association. Some people use a story. And other people have various rooms and compartments in their brain and stuff that they can stick different things in so that the information retrieval becomes easier. I would recommend for things like acronyms and stuff that you come up with something that is going to be memorable to you. So, say for example, we are memorizing the layers of the OSI reference model. Do not panic, this doesn't come in until chapter 2. We have application, session, presentation, transport, network, data link, and physical. You have a number of acronyms that can help you remember this. All people seem to need data processing. Well, that just sounds like somebody who was in information technology and wants to justify their salary. Or Australia Post sucks, they never deliver parcels. Might be another way you could remember it. So come up with an acronym that works for you, and then tie the various bits and pieces to that acronym. We are going to go through all 7 layers of the OSI reference model. In fact, there's a chapter for each of them, and we will get to that fairly soon. Now, so that's sort of some of the things that you're going to need to be able to do. Now, the... labs are going to be, there are actually some modified labs, and there are going to be more modified labs than there were last time. There are some ways of doing the labs. For example, Wireshark is not particularly particularly accessible. But you can use T-Shark, and you can dump the packets to a text file, and we'll be looking at how you do that so that you can watch the network traffic by looking through the text file and jumping through the text file and watching how those packets come in and those sorts of things. Chapter tests work the way that they work for every other exam. We do have diagram descriptions. We also have, obviously, the tests will be done on cisco.netacad.net. If you haven't logged into the Network Academy and set up your profile, then you probably need to talk to Grace, who will assist you with any wibbles you might be having with the calendar or that form that everybody,
including most of everybody, has, except for Catherine, who signed up yesterday.
Well, we can let her off on that one.
She gets a pass on that until she gets it done.
Yeah. By next week, everybody should have logged into the Networking Academy, and we will put up. I will put up the exams. I usually put all of the exams up in one big block, so you can do whichever exams you want within reason, and you can also do like the Chapter 1 exam either this week or next week or whatever. Okie dokie. Network-centric world. Can anybody tell me what is a network? Just generally speaking.
A bunch of devices connected to each other.
Yeah, a bunch of devices connected to each other. How about it be a bit more general? A bunch of things connected to each other. I don't think your mother would appreciate being called a device in the human network.
Oh!
I certainly know my mum wouldn't like to be known as a repeater. Certain things that are connected together or objects that are connected together in some way. Anybody else got any other thoughts on network before we move on? As in, anything add to that definition of network? Yes, the devices are communicating. I think that is an important point. The devices are actually communicating with each other. So if you're looking at the gossip network, you've got my mother, the neighbour, the next person down the street, the person that works at the post office. And in fact, if you lived in a small country town like I did and there was a manual switchboard, that was pretty much the hub of the gossip network. Once something got to the people who knew the switchboard, who worked on the switchboard, you could generally assure yourself that most of the town would know about whatever it was that you were actually that was being gossiped about. And I think it's fair to say that, can people give me an idea of some sort of types of networks that you have? We have the human network, we have the internet, obviously. Any other examples of networks that people can think of?
Telephone.
Yep, we have the transport network and the phone network. Electricity, yeah, the power grid. Peer-to-peer networks, yeah, all right, they're a subclass of networks. They work in a different way. We'll talk about client service and peer-to-peer a bit later, but yeah. Okay, so they're all different sorts of networks. And generally the idea of the networks are that there are a number of nodes, which is one of our funky terms for things, devices, whatever, connected by some form of medium with a desire to communicate. Now, apparently we're going to describe how networks impact our daily lives, describes the role of data networks in the human network, identify the key components of a data network, identify the opportunities and challenges provided by a converged network, describe the network architecture such as fault tolerance, scalability, and quality of service and security. And apparently you guys are going to use an IRC server and a wiki server. Well, we're not actually going to do that exactly. We've modified those labs a little bit. Okay, I think it's fair to say, and obviously these quotes were made back in the time that we weren't as inclusive as we are now, but no man is an island. Now, that is to say that people need to network with each other. People need to connect. They need to communicate. And they need to interact with each other. I don't think anybody would argue with that. It's as important as air, food, water, and shelter, unless you're one of those lonely types that lives in a cave, and then you've just... Yeah, well, it probably is an interconnected thing of things and people and... Okay, so if WordWeb is obviously a good resource. Now, the other thing I was going to point out, has anybody played with the glossary on the exploration curriculum? Has anybody had a look at the glossary? Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, I saw that, but I haven't actually looked into it. I can't remember which page I saw it on.
Oh, it's on every page. There's a glossary link at the top of every page. They did that deliberately. As soon as you open the curriculum, bang, glossary link.
Oh, yeah, I see it. There's a search glossary. Okay, yeah.
And they were very keen to make sure that that would work and that it was accessible. We actually did some accessibility checking, testing stuff with it to make sure that it was actually usable and accessible. Now, I would recommend that the glossary on the Cisco site is very good. I would recommend, however, that students should have their own little document open to make notes of terms that I happen to use that either A, are not in the Cisco glossary, or B, are described in a better way or a different way than what Cisco does, so that you've got another perspective on the various networking terms. It's a drag, but hey, by the time you get to chapter 10, you will want to remember what full duplex communication was, especially when you want to do the final. There are various things that have enhanced the human network. The printing press. Remember that a lot of people were essentially illiterate up until the 1800s, and the revolution of the printing press has really changed the way that humans communicate and share information, so much to the point that you end up with piles and piles and piles of books and stuff that you wouldn't have had, you know, 200 years ago. Technology changes the way humans interact. Hey, how many times have you seen teenagers or heard teenagers texting on the train, or in fact, teenagers talking on their mobile phone on the train as if nobody else is in the carriage? Yes, we would all like to hear about your relationship emo wobbles at a volume that make my ears feel uncomfortable. I'm sure there are people here who are old enough or chronologically advantaged enough to remember before we had mobile phones, or even remember those old bag phones. Does anybody remember the old bag phones that people used to lug around with them? The big batteries and the...
My mum's friend had one of those when I was a kid. She was an old bag.
But that was the phone. That's the question we're asking here.
Yeah, well, it was like a big suitcase. It was really heavy. We couldn't lift it up. It had like the rotary dial on it.
Yeah. No, look, it's certainly that was certainly an experience, and they were very heavy, and they had lots of batteries, and you had to charge them up every night, even though they weighed a ton, and you sort of carried them around, and they tended to be analog back in the day. Now, one of the things that says to me that technology is really influencing the human network is if you meet somebody and you go, "Oh, I'll email you," and they go, "Oh, I don't have an internet connection," you kind of look as, unless you're in specific circumstances, you tend to look at this person as if there's something unusual about them. It's like, what? You don't have an internet connection? And you'll be walking along, and and as you do tend to, you'll hear, you know, old people talking, and you know, one of them will fire up and sort of say, "Oh yes, I saw Jasmine went out with such and such last night. It was on her Facebook profile." And you're like, okay, you're just as entitled to use Facebook as anybody else. But now that you guys are on Facebook, which is perfectly okay, we are seeing this impact the entire, all the different levels of society. You've got everything from 5 and 6 year old kids on Facebook, which is often not a very good idea, depending on who you talk to, which is why they have the under 13 restriction on a lot of this stuff, all the way up to people who are... perhaps in the golden years of their life, keeping tracks on what their grandchildren or younger friends and stuff are up to. Anybody else got any advantage examples of how the human networks impacted the technologies impacted the human network? Or I think I've pretty much flogged that one to death. But if anybody's got anything to add,
well, it certainly makes this lecture possible.
Well, I agree. Yeah, it certainly does. I must say, did anybody feel a little bit of trepidation when you were told that there was this online course you could do and you used this weird thing that rhymed with pillow and was called Ventrilo, and you just thought, how is this going to work? Like, is this even possible? Did anybody sort of wonder about that a little bit? I mean, obviously it did work because we're doing it, but, you know, was it something that people sort of went, whoa, how does this work?
I actually have people that are wondering that now when I told them that I was joining a class like this. They've heard of a lot of online classes, but I explained that it was a lecture-based, you know, class that you actually sort of went into a virtual classroom, if you will. And you guys are actually in a regular classroom setting, so we're sort of as a part of the classroom, even from all the way across the world, especially for the ones here in the U.S.
It's like a virtual classroom. We can join from the comfort of our own homes, or in my case, my bed.
Wow.
Yes, it doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you haven't got the netbook sort of stacked up there somewhere, Chris, and just within range of the microphone so that you can sort of, you know, wake up slowly and participate in lecture.
I've got it balancing on my stomach, but, oh, well, I don't think anyone needs that visual.
No. I think we'll be right. Anyway, back, what was I saying about those networks? So this is obviously a paradigm that it takes people time to get used to. And for a lot of people with vision, the fact that we're doing this via voice is quite alien to them. They want to know where the pictures are. Oh, where's the video? We get a lot of people coming in here to look at how the academy works, and they're like, oh, where's the video? No, you've got the wrong academy. It's not that we don't think you guys would look smashing on video. It's just that we're not going to use the bandwidth. And when we deliver our courses to India, we need to be very concerned about how much bandwidth we are using. And in our case, 1,850 bytes per second is about what we're using on this Ventrilo. And if I do say so myself, for what we are using bandwidth-wise, I reckon it sounds pretty good. But hey, I'm the one who did the codec optimization, so you'd kind of expect that. Okay, now, you guys are lucky. If anybody here has a bit of residual vision, you are welcome to do the Google Earth Lab. If you don't have residual vision, I would, or sufficient residual vision to do Google Earth, I would ask that you answer the questions as much as you can on Google Earth, but the actual application as far as looking at the street and stuff is not accessible, so you can bypass any of the things that deal with the specifics of Google Earth. Remember, if you have done this course before and you happen to have submitted labs, you do not have to submit them again. So there you go. You guys get to take it easy for a bit. The Google Earth is an interesting privacy concern. Can anybody tell me, apart from Chris, who probably uses it for keeping an eye on the neighbours, I'm joking, can anybody else tell me what is Google Earth and what can you do with it?
You can check out where somebody lives, their exact location, and it shows exact pictures of where their house is and everything.
Yeah, I believe it's done through satellite.
It is. They're satellite images. And then in certain locations, you also get street view, which actually gives you a view of what is on the street. Now, there are some significant privacy concerns with this. Do you really want pictures of your house being up on Google? And do you actually get a choice? And is the fact that you haven't mown the grass for the past 6 months something that everybody on Google Earth should be able to look at? It's an interesting technology, but like most technologies, it has both a potentially dark side and a light side as far as its usability and stuff is concerned. Has anybody seen people use Google Earth or had Google Earth described to them. It's basically a map where you can scroll around through an overview of the map, and then you can drill down and zoom down and zoom down into various bits of the map so that you can actually see areas on the Earth's surface, such as people's houses and backyards and things, if you zoom down that much.
Wow, that is creepy. I wonder how detailed the picture is.
It's pretty good.
From what I hear.
Yeah, I
think it's like 3 months out of date.
It is 3 months out of date. The pictures are delayed by 3 months, but, for example, you can see cars parked in a carport. You can see, you know, fences and stuff. You're talking of anything that's sort of bigger than 2 or 3 feet or whatever that's probably going to come up on that picture.
Wow, it's very detailed.
No, unfortunately, Chris, if they were to show up on the pictures, you probably wouldn't want to meet the people that size, I would think. So I think they're pretty safe, luckily. Okay, keep in mind that Google Earth is going to be fairly bandwidth intensive because it is pulling down pictures and things, so that is something to be aware of. Okay, has anybody here used... Oh, okay. Has anybody here not used instant messaging? Okay, can anybody tell me what is instant messaging? What would we use that for?
That's pretty self-explanatory, to send messages instantly to each other over computer.
The only difference in the instant, I think, is whether the person's there. They don't seem to be as instant as they used to be. Now it's like people sign in and then walk away from their machine.
Well, I think that's a phenomenon of broadband. I'm not alive. Yes, you are. However, they're not... Well, they're called instant messaging, but it's not that instant. It probably did take a couple of hundred milliseconds for that message to get from... you know, that person to me in chat. So instant being a relative term, it's not exactly instant as we would say. It's very quick messaging. Has anybody ever experienced the absolute shock and disbelief when an SMS didn't get delivered straight away? This is an interesting phenomenon because most of the young people that I know tend to believe that A, SMSs should always be delivered, and B, they should be delivered instantly, despite the fact that the small print in every phone contract and every telecommunications provider's contract clearly states that not only are SMSs not guaranteed to be delivered, but the time in which the SMSs are delivered is not guaranteed either.
Yeah, I've actually seen that in some of the contracts I've seen read. And you would be surprised, there are actually a lot that aren't delivered.
Absolutely. Okay, so instant transfer of messages, text, voice, and graphics. Now, has everybody added me to my work account anyway? I mean, if you add my home account and I've had a few Southerns and Cokes and I do happen to answer the Skype, then you get what you deserve. But I will put my work Skype into the chat so that you guys can add me to your work account to your Skype, and you can get in touch with me when I'm in at the association or working on Cavi stuff. And that is my work Skype. As far as instant messaging is concerned, does anybody use anything else? I use MSN Messenger, which I will put in here. Any other sort of instant messages that people use? Anybody use Facebook chat, LJ Talk, those sorts of things? Anybody use any of those?
Yeah, I use Facebook chat, and I also do text chat on Skype sometimes.
I use Facebook chat too. It's not.
Plugins that allow it to work in Miranda, which makes life easier. Has anyone played with Instant Bird?
I was just going to say that. Has anyone played with that one? Because that's very cool for Facebook.
Never heard of it. Was it a Windows one?
Yes, it's a Windows, very light little messenger. It's Mozilla's answer to like MSN Messenger. Unbelievably light, and it just sends and receives messages. It doesn't do anything else, but for what it does, it's absolutely awesome.
Wow.
Apparently, though, it's difficult to tell when people are online or though with it, though, somebody was saying.
Not if you only show online content.
Yeah.
you got a point there.
But you can't actually tell when people are online and when they're away and stuff, I don't think, somebody was saying.
No, not easily.
Certainly worth a look, but obviously there are... there are actually, different messengers you can use and things that you can use.
Yeah, I think I use a little bit of all the networks myself. I'm a Twitter user, a Facebook user, and an ADM, which is an MSN type of client for Macintosh. I remember back in the day when it was all MSN, literally you had to go and install an actual client.
I think ADM is pretty popular among the Mac people, and I don't know whether anybody's told you, Edward, there's an update to Growl. You need to uninstall the existing Growl and put the 1.2 on that now respects the rate of voice set in system preferences. Thank you, Apple.
Oh, and you can get... great. I've been hearing that it's up there, but I didn't know how to actually get it. It told me it was available, but I didn't know how to click to download it.
You uninstall the version of Growl you've got, and you go to growl.info and get the new one. So there you go.
Great.
So finally your Growls will actually torque at a reasonable speed rather than driving you mental with lots of excess text at a slow speed. So if you've got a Mac, you want the new Growl because it respects the rate of speech set in the system preferences, so Growl doesn't talk really slow. For anybody who doesn't have a Mac, Growl is an infrastructure that allows programs to speak voice messages, things such as Twitter clients, instant messages, online, offline, status changes and stuff. And if you're lucky, the people have implemented it really, really well. And if you're really unlucky, then they're cited and they've just implemented this talky thing and it says all the things that it shouldn't and none of the things that it should because nobody's actually given thought to what actually needs to be spoken. So your mileage may vary. Keep that in mind. It's not a default thing on the Mac, so if you don't have it and you do have a Mac, you may want to go to growl.info and get it, and then figure out how to turn off Growl support in all of the applications where you don't want it.
That's always fun. Or try to figure out why the application you want is not in there.
Yeah. Okay, so how many other Mac users have we got other than Edward, just out of morbid curiosity? I know Brian's got one. I've got one.
I have one.
Okay, you've got one too.
I'm going to play with a virtual machine a little later today.
Does the iPhone...
Kind of. But it's Mac-like. So it's an Apple device. Yeah, so we'll kind of count that. If you've got one of the new sort of gesture-y, sort of touchpad-y things, your Mac starts to behave a lot like an iPhone and vice versa. So there's certainly a lot of crossover between the operating systems and the interfaces on the two different styles of device.
I used Mac up until 1997.
What made you switch?
We bought a PC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, to be honest with you, and we're not going to go into it on lecture, but Chris and I are not big proponents of the Mac. In fact, I've got a MacBook that I would just turf out the nearest window. That's about how thrilled with it I am. And I do know how to use VoiceOver and stuff, but we'll leave it to you guys who enjoy that sort of thing. Okay, weblog, blog, or whatever you want to call them, just so not cool ever since Twitter has come out because nobody wants to write more than 140 characters, it seems. Everybody familiar with blogs? I've got one. I don't tend to publish it anymore because I got into trouble a couple of years ago for some of the content in it, but you can Google it up if you really want to find it. Everybody else come across blogs?
So you think blogs are going by the wayside?
I don't think they're as popular as they once were. A lot of the blogs I tend to find are not updated as regularly as they once were. A lot of people don't seem to be putting aside the time to write a one or a two-page article. They're just basically tweeting, I just got up and had coffee, and that's about the depth of it. I mean, there are still blogs out there, and as far as like commercial companies and stuff, if there's one that's maintained for a company, they'll tend to keep it up. But personal... personal blogging has certainly fallen by the wayside to a degree. I mean, it's still out there, but it's just not as popular as, say, it was 2 years ago.
People who are like natural writers will keep up with the blogs, but those who have nothing to say are generally saying it in 140 characters or less these days.
Yeah.
I haven't been on it, but does that affect MySpace?
Is that still
MySpace?
Around?
Yeah, it's still around.
I wondered that too.
Yeah, it's still around. It's not very accessible, though, as far as I remember. Does anybody have any luck accessing MySpace? I didn't quite try too hard.
I never got into it, yeah.
Hey, Chris.
Neil.
This is Paulette Wilson. I've been trying to get in touch with you for some time. And all to no avail. Is this a convenient time for me to run something by you quick?
In the middle of lecture? No, but if you want to hang around a bit, I'll talk to you afterwards.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize we were in the middle of lecture. I was in the lobby, I thought.
Ah, but I moved you down, because if you turn up on channel and lecture is in progress, I will move you down by default so that you can hear what's going on. I'm sure that Chris could catch up with you at some point, or you could exchange some contact details at some point, but I'm sorry, we are in the middle of Exploration 1, Module 1, right at the moment.
Come back in an hour.
I apologize.
No worries. Okay. Okay, live journal. I've got a live journal. There are lots of other things. Blogger. I can't think of any other ones right off the top of my head. Some of them are really noisy. Really noisy and full of gunk. I really can't stand those ones that have got all sorts of links and things that are, you know, quite difficult to navigate, but, you know, they're quite visually pretty. So you've got to watch which blogging platform you're going to use and what you're going to do with it. Another big one that a lot of people like is WordPress. A lot of people put WordPress up on their websites and things, and they use it as a content management system. You can also do blogging through Drupal, which is another big content management system and that sort of thing. Wikis. Okay, has anybody not been to Wikipedia? Okay, we've all been to Wikipedia. Okay. One of the things you've got to keep in mind about Wikipedia is it's a good starting point. Because it is edited by everybody out on the internet, which is what a wiki is, I can't remember. Wasn't wiki the Hawaiian word for something? I just can't remember. I'd have to go define colon wiki in Google and find out. But apparently it's some word from some language.
You need that glossary there.
No, whoever you are, you can go. Now, I'm just Googling define wiki. Here we are. Okay, lots of things. Here we are. Okay, it's generally a web application that runs on a web server, and it allows you to edit documents using a simplified markup language. And can't actually find the actual definition of wiki in a reasonable amount of time, so yeah, pretty much. But it's from one of the I can't remember what language it's from, but they took it from a language, okay? So we've all used wikis. There's lots of wikis, things like TikiWiki, MediaWiki, stuff like that. So that's all good. It's all happening. Okay. Podcasts. Okay. Anybody got a favorite podcast? Any podcast that they like to listen to. And you don't just have to have an iPod for a podcast, but obviously that's where the original term came from, and I'm surprised we're not all writing podcast. TM! Podcast is a trademark of Apple Corporation after every time we say podcast. But anybody got any favourite podcasts?
Blind Cool Tech.
Fair enough.
Yes, that's a good one.
Oh, and Edward, is it? I also listen to your podcast. I like that. It's very good.
Which podcast?
Thank you.
Oh, his.
Mm.
Okay, fair enough. We don't know why, but Blind Cool Tech won't put our stuff up, so we're not too happy with Blind Cool Tech at the moment. We've done two presentations for Blind Cool Tech, and it never went up. So it is a good podcast, but the actual posting of content to Blind Cool Tech seems somewhat sporadic of late. So we're not sure what's going on there.
Their page is too big, too. They really need to organize it. It's going to get so big it's going to crash a browser one day.
And they won't respond to emails, so yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. Either they really don't like us for some reason, or they just don't respond to emails.
I think the guys give... I think he's just sort of kind of... I don't know, he's like a ghost. He doesn't even do his own anymore.
Maybe they've heard me on lecture too many times, going, "Welcome to Blind Cool Tech." And they've sort of, you know, taken offense to that, so...
Oh, some of their reviews are actually pretty good. I like
they're good.
Travel reviews.
Oh, yeah, no, they're wonderful. There's some excellent content. There is some excellent content on Blind Cool Tech. There is also some content that, well, shall we say, that you'll listen to it and you'll never get that half an hour of your life back. I think one of the funniest Blind Cool Techs I ever heard, the two funniest I ever heard, one was where Larry and his wife went to the county fair. I don't know whether that one's been taken down, but boy, oh boy, she was not having a good day that day, and we all got to hear about it. anybody who wants that one, I've got it. I hung on to that one. The other
I
one,
want it.
Okay, yeah, we'll sort that out. It's pretty funny. It's like, you know, like, can we go in and get some food? I don't want to get some food. I don't want to walk around here. Oh, okay, then. Well, we could go over and say this. I don't want to do that.
Oh, my God.
It's
amazing.
I don't
think he's with her anymore, actually. I think she disappeared very shortly after that. You never see her anymore.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound like that would be a bad thing.
And we all know why.
Yeah, anyway, so there's that one. And then the other one I think was priceless was Jonathan Mosen was interviewing Larry Skukon. And his favourite bit was, well, if some of us want access to your information in a timely fashion and we don't have the time to go through the entire walk home from work with the dog, is there a condensed method of getting this information? And I had a chuckle. That was probably one of the most poignant questions, and sadly, no, there is no concise way of getting that information at this time.
I've got the definition of wiki.
You've got the definition.
It's the word for quick.
Ah, yes. I remember it comes up in one of the labs, but I just couldn't find it in a timely fashion, so thank you for that. So apparently it means quick in Hawaiian or something like that. I'd have to check that with Stacey, but it probably does. I mean, just while we're talking about it, my favourite podcast is one called Inspired Minds by Uncommon Knowledge, which are a hypnosis mob, and they talk about different things each month about how the brain works, how psychology works, and, you know, getting over fear of public speaking and all that sort of stuff. Just give me a sec. Have you guys got something to go on with over there, or...? I'm well. Alex can get you into the curriculum if you want to find out what
Windows
7
test would. Oh, is he doing? Did he find something for?
Okay. Well, I'm sure Alex can give you a hand with that. He probably even knows what the pictures are. He's doing final diagram descriptions for exploration, just so you know. Probably this one over here to my left, actually, just not the one in the corner. Sorry, guys, I'll edit that bit out of the recording. We have the magic of sound editing. Okay, so yeah, and we can swap podcasts we like on the mailing lists or something, as long as we don't get too off topic, and we can also come across some different things. If you, of course, have an iPod, or as I call them, an iThing, because that covers the iPod, the iPad, and the iPhone, you can obviously download podcasts with iTunes. If you're using Windows, you can download podcasts with Juice or another aggregator. And if you happen to know how to make something into a podcast, I want to hear from you off list, because I'd like to make our lectures into a podcast. Otherwise, I'll do some Googling and work it out.
That's a fine idea, Kerry. That's a great idea.
Yes, wouldn't it make everybody happy if you sort of press buttons and it goes doo-doo-dunk, and then you've got like an iPod full of Cavi lectures? My condolences. Okay, e-learning, I don't have to talk about that. Yeah, I will. I've just got to figure out how you do that XML stuff. And there's got to be some podcast for idiots thing out there that'll do it for me, or at least I can work it out and paste it all
in. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was meant to be student, looking into that for you. Sorry, I forgot.
Username and password of student will get you in. Okay. Cool. E-learning. Advantage of distance courses such as this one. Don't think we really need to talk about that. Except for perhaps the fact... Okay. Online courses such as business courses allow people to do training and stuff without actually having to travel. This is a big saver. You don't have to actually pay for transport, you don't have to deal with mobility, you don't have to battle with the lack of audio tactile signals, just had to throw that one in, and you can get where you need to go without actually leaving your house, and you can do all the training, and it saves you a bucket of time. If I wasn't actually in at the association, which I am because we have local students, I would save myself 3 hours a day in travel. But that is not to be, so there you have it. Okay, anybody got any questions, queries before we move on to intranets, extranets, etc.? Okay, intranets are things that are accessible to people in a company. So say, for example, you're working for Widgets Proprietary Limited. The intranet will allow you to access stuff inside of Widgets Proprietary Limit. An extranet allows people outside of Widgets Proprietary Limited to query the ability of the availability. www.qcat.org, student resources, curriculum, exploration. What's up? Anybody dealt with telecommuting, I should say? Anybody here work from home or work from a different location to where their actual work is? I do it all the time.
I have.
Yeah, when it's set up, it works really well. And one of the reasons why we got blind people into doing Cisco stuff was because there are a lot of blind people who have significant mobility challenges. And it was felt that if you could get them to work on remote routers and stuff and earn lots of money, that would make them and a lot of other people happy.
Cool.
Ah, excellent. Running a remote call center. That must have been an interesting challenge.
Actually, it was, because the agents were all over South Africa, so it was pretty... a tall order to make sure that agents were logged in at the right time and so on.
It also changes the way we play online games, social networking, etc. I think we've covered Facebook and all that sort of stuff. Okay, before we communicate, we need to set rules or protocols. And those rules and protocols are to govern how conversation is going to take place. So, for example, generally speaking, if we're looking at a phone call, generally speaking, the phone will ring. Somebody will answer it depending on where they are. They will either say hello, or they will say hello and their name, or sometimes they'll say the last four digits of their phone number. It just depends on where they are. And then the other person talks, and then the original person talks, and then generally the conversation goes backwards and forwards until some people, one person says goodbye, and then the other person says goodbye. Now, you'd think this was a pretty simple protocol, but we actually had a situation a couple of years back. One of our students, and I won't say where they were from, when they'd finished talking to me about whatever it was that they thought they'd finished talking about, they used to just hang up. No warning, just click, and you know, Skype connection was dead. And absolutely brilliant stuff, especially because half the time there was actually something really important I was about to tell him, and he just hung up on me before I could actually do that. So, yeah, look, if you're going to go, say bye, and I'll know that you're going, and I will say bye as well. So they're the sorts of protocols we're dealing with as far as... As far as the protocols are concerned. So identify. Sorry, anybody got any comments, questions about that?
Some phone etiquette, yeah.
So you're looking at an identified sender and receiver. That's important. These are the things we need for communication. Agreed method of communication, you know, telephone, face-to-face, photograph, whatever. Common language and grammar. speed and timing of delivery. Yep, that can be important. Has anybody been on one of those call centers over VoIP and you can't understand a word of what that person in the Philippines is saying? It's a challenge.
Too many times.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'm... I wonder if I'm the only one that finds it ironic that when you call up Linksys for tech support, you get onto this really badly provisioned call center using VoIP technology, and actually getting your return merchant authorization stuff through can take significant time and incredible amounts of patience. I would hope that as we move towards voice over IP, that people consider the implications, ramifications that are going to come into place if you use that sort of technology with badly provisioned networks.
Yeah, I've actually called Linksys for that reason, and their quality of their calls doesn't encourage me to buy any of their VoIP gear, but I actually have some, and it works well. I actually got one today that I'd been hearing about, but it never happened until lately, where someone called from Microsoft, except it was an unknown area call, to help me fix my Windows problem. And I sort of played along, and they wanted me to install things.
Yes, actually.
A lot of people have gotten those calls.
Yeah, Luke got one. Carol got one.
Meredith got
quite a number of... Oh, Meredith got two of them. I saw Meredith today. She'll be in tomorrow, by the way. She was too busy doing mobility with Paul, and we literally ran into them in the hallway.
I was actually quite excited.
Yeah,
yeah, I think I would have screwed with them if I ever get one.
Language. I have to edit now. Messed with them would be a good term. Yeah, it could be fun. Apparently, people I know have actually sort of talked along and talked along and talked along, and about 15 minutes later, they've gone, yeah, I guess I should have told you I'm running a Linux box.
No, I just wanted to see what they wanted to do, so I actually didn't do anything, but I know it well enough from memory that I could sort of play along, and they wanted me to go to this website, which I did, because I was on a virtual machine, I don't care. And they wanted me to install programs, and I thought, oh, here's where we're stopping.
Yeah,
I know it's a lot of people that could really get set by that. A lot of, you know, people that don't really know a lot about what's going on. They just want their computer to work. That a lot of people could fall for that. That's scary.
It is, and one of the biggest concerns is that there are people who, when you ring, if they get rung up and told that they've got junk files on their computer, they're going to believe the person who's calling. Maybe they do have junk files on their computer, but I'd be asking myself, how does this person know that I've got junk files on my computer? And this comes down to a lot of hoax emails and phishing schemes and stuff, which we don't really talk about here, but, you know, where you get a message from the Bank of Canada telling you that you've got, you know, $300,000 in an unclaimed account. I wish, but I don't bank with the Bank of Canada.
Yeah, it's really scary what people do.
What they often do, and a lot of them, because I've actually gotten them from my bank.
Maybe it's leftover funds from that Nigerian prince who needed your help getting all that money.
Oh, well, there is that. But yeah, no, there are, and sometimes you do get them from the bank that you do bank with. And that can always often be a challenge. So, and confirmation and acknowledgement requirements. It's all very well and good to say something to somebody, but unless they actually know what you said and understand it, it can be quite a challenge for them to get a message or whatever, especially if you're, you know, giving numbers or bits of information. Communications quality is important. If I was going to mumble along the whole lecture like this, you wouldn't be able to understand a word I was saying. Wouldn't be a very exciting lecture, would it? So I need to speak clearly and hopefully get some ideas across to you guys, or at least try to. External things that can affect this are the quality of the path between the sender and receiver, the number of times that the message has to change form. Are we going from analog to digital, digital to analog? Are we going from packets to frames? Are we then fragmenting those frames? What are we doing with the message? The number of times the message has to be redirected or readdressed, that's always fun. How many other messages are transmitted at the same time on the communications medium? And how much time have we actually got to get this message across? Any questions on that?
On the number of messages, I guess that would be due to something similar to perhaps a overloaded circuit, perhaps. or maybe your congestion and net traffic?
Similar. We do talk about circuit switching and packet switching a little bit further down, but essentially if you're doing packet switching, you can multiplex a number of messages on the same transmission medium. So you and your wife could both go on Facebook at the same time, and that would be multiplexing your connections over the same internet connection potentially, so there would be two messages transferring on that connection. So that's obviously where we deal with the contention and stuff on the communications medium. The factors that internally affect it are the size of the message, the complexity of the message, the importance of the message, in other words, which messages are important, which ones aren't. Okay, networks as a platform, they have four things in common. Rules, agreements about how messages are sent, received, directed, and interpreted. The messages or units of information that travel from one device to another, they've got to be compatible. A medium that can transport these messages. And devices on the network that exchange messages with each other. Standards allow vendors from various equipment to communicate with each other. So, for example, you've got Microsoft gear and you've got Mac gear. I don't know if anybody remembers the bad old versions of OS 9 where you actually had to get that thing called Dave to install on your Mac before it could talk to any Microsoft network.
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was certainly a challenge. The other problem is, of course, that there are some interesting and nifty bugs with Mac Samba implementation under Snow Leopard, which causes us no end of grief, especially when we're passing through credentials and stuff. Which can be a challenge if you're trying to connect to other Samba resources. I can't exactly remember the specifics, but we certainly had a problem with it here, getting it to connect happily to SMB resources.
Yeah, it can definitely be a challenge. I have one set up myself, and it does take it a while to go in and actually set up permissions and stuff properly to make it understand that this is what you want to connect to, especially for printers. That's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, well, once you get the underlying cups system configured, it tends to get easier, but you've initially got to get cups configured, and then you've got to share those things out, and yeah, it's all good. Okay, now, when we're talking about mediums, we're not talking about John Edwards and crossing over. We are talking about the things that messages travel on. So we're talking about wire, copper, optical fiber, air, radio waves, those sorts of things. So copper, you've got coaxial cables, phone cables, twisted pair, and those sorts of things. Now, optical fiber are thin strands of glass that carry light waves. You've got single mode fiber and multimode fiber. Multimode fiber uses infrared light, and single mode fiber uses coherent light or infrared lasers, and single mode fiber is more expensive, but the signals can travel further. Any questions on mediums? Okay, we do tend to cover this stuff in a lot more detail as the weeks go on, but this is sort of an overview of the network stuff. TCP/IP is the stuff that carries most of the network traffic these days. We used to have other protocols such as AppleTalk, IPX, SPX, NetBUI, DECnet, ARCNet, all those sorts of things. Most things now talk TCP/IP. Transmission Control Protocol / Internet Protocol. It is a protocol suite, which is to say that it has lots of other protocols that go together to make up the whole TCP/IP thingamajig. It has addressing, it has routing, and it has error detection and correction mechanisms to ensure that traffic gets from source to destination where possible. Network convergence. We're talking about running all different sorts of networks on common infrastructure. You used to have television networks running separately to radio networks, running separately to telephone networks, which would all then run separately to the internet. However, these days we're seeing the blurring of the lines. We have internet radio stations. Yes, I'm blind and I have an internet radio station. Hurrah! How many of those do we see? You have television being delivered over the internet. You have voice over IP, which is phone systems sent over the internet. So you are seeing a convergence of these technologies, with a subnote that there is maybe three or four really good blindy stations, and the rest of them are somebody with a copy of Station Playlist Studio broadcasting random stuff. Anyone here a big user of internet radio? I've got OO Tunes for the iThing that allows me to listen to various stations. Anybody else listen to a significant amount of internet radio?
Yeah, I use that OO Tunes quite a bit. I don't, other than that, really. But there's some pretty good ones on there. And I actually
found
Perth ones to see what there was.
They all talk about Perth the whole lot. BBC.
Lots of people listen to the BBC, actually. I think the BBC is one of the most popular internationally listened to news or some of the other stations. Apparently, I see rumours that they're coming out with an iPlayer app for the iPhone soon. I don't know whether that's actually going to happen. I think the only thing I've got against the BBC, and they're a great reporting agency, but could they cheer up a bit, please? Can we have some good news on the BBC, please? I don't want to see how the world is tearing itself apart all the time, even though there's lots of that. We tend to flick the BBC off around here if I'm having a bad day because, well, it can get you down if you let it. But it's a really excellent news source.
It sounds like most of our stations here in South Africa.
Yeah, well, I suppose good news doesn't sell. So, you know, you get the downside of things. I had this friend of ours sort of ring me up and go, the world is falling apart. I'm like, yes, I know. Hang on, you've been listening to BBC World Service again, haven't you? Yes, how do you know? Just a guess. Okie dokie. So OO Tunes rocks. If you've got an iThing, I definitely look at OO Tunes. A lot of other people like TuneIn Radio. It just depends on what sort of interface you like. Actually, you tell you what, another thing that a lot of people stream is the cricket. You'll find a lot of cricket streamed from different stations and different games and stuff. So if cricket is your thing, you can now listen to it all year round over the internet. None of that tedious mucking around with shortwave that the avid fans used to do back in 1986 when I saw them listening to the different matches. So yeah, there's another thing that you see a lot of stream. Networks need four things. They need fault tolerance, so that if something falls over, the network keeps running. That's pretty important. Even with a network of two users, you wouldn't believe how much of an impact it has on the other user if I decide I'm upgrading some critical service, like the email. Of course, we all managed, but you know, it's interesting to see how disruptive it is to have the email down for 10 minutes. We'll have to have a look at that, DI radio. I'll have to have a gander at that later. Often we don't do a lot of internet radio streaming over here in Australia because we tend to be bandwidth limited. So pulling down gigs and gigs and gigs, listening to the radio over the internet is often not a good look. And in fact, for companies, it's become quite a problem with everybody at their desk. If you've got 20 people at their desk all listening to a different internet radio station, or even 10 of them listening to the same radio station, that can chew up a lot of inbound bandwidth. Interesting problems that we face in the information age.
Yeah, I had to be a nasty network admin and issue a prohibition against that because the VoIP line started to get really lousy quality because everybody was listening to the radio at the office, and the phone card was dropping.
Yeah, we have a friend that said that.
Oh, the bandwidth charges in South Africa are horrific. It's like $10 a gig or something. I don't know what it actually is, but it's amazing. They're high. They're really high.
Why is that? Why are some countries like Australia and Africa, why do they have such bandwidth tightness, and why does it cost so much?
The answer to that question is really interesting, and you wouldn't think about it as an American.
$100 for 10 gig, wow.
Yeah.
The reason is that it is expensive to get the bandwidth to these places. Whatever lines the bandwidth is coming over to get into these places is, you've actually got to get the bandwidth all the way to Australia or all the way to Africa. And if somebody has control over that particular pipe into the country, then they can charge whatever they want for whatever volume of data comes over that pipe. The other thing you've got to keep in mind is if, and I'm going to offend a few people here, but if you live in America and you think America is the only place on the planet, which of course is nobody here, then all of the resources you most likely want to access are generally speaking going to be in America. The huge majority of stuff is going to be in America, so you're not impacting the transatlantic links and stuff that much because you're pulling content from inside your own country to a large extent. I mean, obviously that isn't as clear-cut as it used to be, but obviously if you're not pulling data long distance, it's cheaper to pull that data, you know, from local resources and stuff. Generally speaking, that's why people were installing proxy servers in America and stuff. There's a backbone of proxy servers that actually reduces the load on the transcontinental links. To stop those links from saturating. If you live in America or one of these other countries that has unmetered internet, people download stuff like Drunken Sailors. People torrent their entire television collection. 250 gig a month, who cares? I've got unlimited bandwidth and I've got 20 meg down and 4 meg up or whatever. The problem is, and this is what the US people are starting to realise, and sadly, the Canadians have had, or some of the Canadians have had this hoisted on them. Now, all of the people have realised that this bandwidth is, the actual usage of this bandwidth is becoming a problem, and they're going to cap the top 5% of users or put bandwidth caps of 250 gig on an internet account or something. And for people who've never had those bandwidth caps put on before, it's certainly a lesson in conservation because, I'll be honest, when Grace first came to Australia for the first 10 minutes she was here, she hadn't actually got on the internet, but it never occurred to her to think about how much she was downloading because you don't have to over in the States. You just grab it, so what? Over here, when you hit 100 gig, on the plan I'm on anyway, you get shaped to 128 kilobits.
256.
I'm on a 75 gig cap, and I've looked, and there's a few. It's actually a big controversy with our CRTC, which is sort of the communications outdated regulatory agency. The big companies want to impose stricter bandwidth, and the small ones are saying, but then we can't compete because we can't offer anything else. And it's quite the controversy actually at the moment in Canada. I haven't had an unlimited no cap connection for a couple of years. They're pretty much non-existent now.
Wow.
And the bad news is for you guys. Go ahead, sorry. Yeah, you go ahead.
We are now just starting to get uncapped here, but although they tell you it's uncapped, it's like you've got a 10-day rolling period of 20 gigs for every 10 days.
Oh, that's better than what it has been, though. I mean, it's still not fair, but at least it's better than what it has been. We have another friend who lives in South Africa, and she pays by the gig, and it's expensive. And you buy 3 gigs, and 3 gigs doesn't go that far these days, especially with the media-heavy internet that we do.
Are there no backbones like America has in Australia or in Africa?
There are backbones, but the fact is that you've got a finite information carrying capacity. You've got, 500 megabits. You've got 2 gigabits or whatever the backbone happens to be. You think about it, if in Australia, most of the traffic from Australia is destined to the US, www.facebook.com, www.twitter.com, www.msn.com, google.com, need I continue. So the actual transcontinental links are under quite a load to actually get information to and from the US or whatever. Apparently, I think it was IINet last year put in a cable from Perth to Guam to get more bandwidth into the country. But I think there's only three or four cables bringing stuff into the country. You've got Telstra, you've got Optus, you've got AARNet, you've got IINet's cable, and then anything else comes in by satellite.
Well, here we've only got two major providers, and that's Internet Solutions and Telkom, our telecommunications network.
Yeah, and basically what happens is it really becomes an issue of contention. Who is going to get the bandwidth? How much bandwidth are they going to get? I mean, I don't know whether anybody's shared an internet connection with somebody else in dorm rooms or whatever, but, you know, it almost gets to fisty fights if somebody's watching YouTube and somebody else wants to read their mail and Gmail's going as slow as a snail, but the YouTube of the cute little kittens is just going just fine. So bandwidth contention is a real issue. Because I assume everybody's had that. You've all tried to, say, for example, listen to internet radio while downloading a big file, and the internet radio breaks up and it's all quite messy.
Well, yeah, it's very common, right, especially in a family network or even the way cable networks are run. Somebody's watching TV or anything like that, it always pulls on that as well.
I found that even block traffic moving in a traffic will slow it down.
You might be really surprised that I'm actually currently running 256K on wireless. So, yeah, and my upload and download speed is about 16K a second. So,
but over there, that's good. Like, I mean, it's not amazing, but over there, that is actually good internet. Like, that is pretty reason. That's pretty cool for internet. And if you're on those sorts of connections, you learn about things like compressed tunnels. You open VPN into something that's better connected, and you run compression between you and the endpoint so that you can pull down more data than the link will generally take down. Or you look at things like squeeze.com, and I can't remember how you spell it, but there's actually a thing that actually squeezes down web pages and stuff. And if you're browsing the internet over mobile phones and stuff, well, if you're me, you tend to look up every compression trick in the book to get as much bandwidth over a limited pipe as you possibly can. So, all fun and games.
Never knew about stuff like that. That's interesting. That would definitely be a cool, a neat discussion to go into. Conservation of bandwidth due to either slower connections or, you know, like you said, mobile sites. That's pretty common. Less cluttery sites, of course, you don't see as much information, but you wouldn't for reasons of restriction on the number of things that can show on a mobile screen anyway.
Yeah, but often, like, we went away on holidays the year before last, and it's interesting because you end up... doing everything you possibly can to make that connection go as fast as possible. We had, like, you know, 28.8 connection to the internet, reading all of our email and stuff, and yeah, certainly a challenge. We might talk about that at some point. We may have some of the social time. We'll talk about ways of conserving bandwidth and stuff, but we'll come back to that. But bandwidth is not unlimited. And if you're used to having it unlimited, people jump up and down and squawk and make all sorts of noises. But let's face it, you pay for power, you pay for water, you pay for, you know, housing or whatever, you pay for food. There are people who believe that you should pay for bandwidth and that everybody should pay their share. Of course, those people probably come out with quite nice profits, but that money also goes back into maintaining the infrastructure. Now, the internet, of course, needs some fault tolerance, so the ability to survive various faults and things going down. If the Telstra link drops out, you should be able to send backup stuff over the Optus link and vice versa. Multiple redundant paths between different points on the internet to allow that to happen. We have various intelligent routing protocols that allow that traffic to be switched. And the scalability of the network can expand to meet the expectation of the users. Well, didn't AT&T find that out the hard way? Once you get a couple of gazillion iPhones turning up on your network, all of a sudden your mobile data carrying capacity is going to be pushed to the limit as everybody fires up their copy of OO Tunes and listens to the BBC, just as an example.
Oh, yeah.
And it's worth realising that certain things are going to put a higher drain on your network than others. So, for example, Ventrilo is, especially this server, is very good for low bandwidth connections. You're looking at 1,800 bytes per second, much better than Skype's 64,000 bytes per second, or depending on whether it's in wide or narrow band. Skype can chew quite a lot of bandwidth. You can't use Skype on dial-up anymore. It just doesn't work unless you're running sort of an old 3.8. Looking at things like video, very high bandwidth utilization, and depending on the encode rates and stuff on various things, you can get quite high bandwidth requirements on high fidelity streams and stuff. So whilst Mushroom FM will sound absolutely beautiful in stereo, it's going to do a number on your bandwidth doing it. Quality of service is important for real-time applications such as videos, otherwise you end up with a situation where stuff buffers and you don't get the whole thing, and you're just like, I'm not watching this anymore, it's too tedious. It changes the way networks are designed and built, because you've got to ensure this quality of service stuff is actually in place. Security of information is important, such as things with HTTPS and encryption and those sorts of things. Nobody would like it if their bank details were sent in the clear. Anybody remember the name of that exploit that came out for Firefox and stuff that would steal your Facebook credentials because the login page was secure but the rest of it wasn't?
Fire Sheep,
yes it was. Firesheep. Yeah, basically once you logged into Facebook and you actually put in the login and password on the secure password page, it would then go back to non-HTTPS connectivity and it would use a cookie to track the fact that you had logged in. And guess what? If you managed to steal somebody else's Facebook authentication cookie, you could then start posting sordid updates about them.
Ugh.
So next time you fire up that iPhone on the free network at the airport and go on and decide that you're going to check Twitter or whatever, watch out that somebody doesn't nick your authentication cookies and start tweeting as you or something. I don't think it's a problem necessarily with Twitter, but it was certainly a problem with Facebook, Gmail. There is actually a secure version of Gmail now. It was covered in a publication called Windows Secrets. Now, there is a free newsletter for Windows Secrets, and there's a paid newsletter for Windows Secrets. I'd strongly recommend people definitely get the free one, and if you can afford it, $5 or $10 a year, get the paid one. It's really good content in Windows Secrets, and you get access to all the archives. I usually don't plug commercial stuff like that, but Windows Secrets is quite a good one.
If he doesn't plug it, I will. I've been a subscriber way back from the beginning of the Langle list, I think in 2001, and it's brilliant. I mean, I learn a ton of stuff there.
Oh, well, I'll have to check that out.
So you've got many tools and practices in place to protect the security and protect the security of data and all those. Yeah, windowssecrets.com, absolutely brilliant. Even if you have a look at one of the free newsletters and decide whether it's something you'd be interested in. If you are involved with Windows and you are involved with IT, I would highly recommend the Windows Secrets newsletter. It's a once-a-month publication that is certainly gives you a lot of good information. I think I might stop there and do the rest of circuit switched and packet switched next week, partially because I've been talking a lot and I've just about had enough of talking until I've had my next cup of tea. But does anybody have any questions, queries, before obviously we hit the stop? Your tasks for this week, I will post to announce. The recording will go up a little bit later today. You can wait until next week for the Chapter 1 test, so you don't have to do the Chapter 1 test this week.
There is no Chapter 1.
Oh, no, there isn't a Chapter 1 test for this module, is there? That's right. We're missing Chapter 1 for exploration. You don't get a Chapter 1 test, so there you go.
Do we need to download Packet Tracer?
No. Packet Tracer is 100% inaccessible. Don't waste your bandwidth.
Okay.
Does that answer that?
Well, I've got to be pretty clear about it because we have to actually write alternatives to the Packet Tracer labs because Packet Tracer is still currently inaccessible. There are some utilities on the Mac that will allow you to do certain packet capture stuff. There is work on making Packet Tracer accessible, but unfortunately Packet Tracer is so graphical and stuff that plonking the devices down and stuff without some significant rewriting is not going to happen with accessible technology. And remember, if you can't see, you're not doing Lab 1.1.1, which is the Google Earth one. You are encouraged to do the Wiki one and the IRC one, which have been modified, and the actual Wiki one you actually do on TikiWiki's actual site. You don't actually do it on the Eagle Server bundle. So I've modified those. And yeah, I saw a couple of students actually do it last year, so the lab is actually doable. Feel free to network amongst yourselves, as well as asking us, because we are here to help. You guys are allowed to work in groups. This server is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except for when Darkstar decides to chuck a wobbly. If you guys want to organise times to meet up and chat with each other, you can certainly do that. And you can help each other with various labs and things. I certainly don't have a problem with that, but I will talk about the various labs and stuff next week. Any other general questions before I hit stop?
Yeah, so all of this material is on the Cisco site, right? Or is it on the QCAT?
Most of the material you need will be on the QCAT website. So you can either read your curriculum from the QCAT site, or you can read it from cisco.netacad. I would recommend reading it from QCAT because it's easier. The username for the curriculum is CAVI, C-A-V-I, and the password is C-A-V-I. It is accessible Flash, and you will need a recent Flash installed, and it does work, unless, of course, you're using Window Eyes, where you turn off whatever that thing is called, suspend, and it will then work a lot better if you do that. So www.qcat.org, student resources, and there is a link for the exploration curriculum, and there is also a link for the exploration subsection. Once you receive all of the introductory emails, it will cover where all of those resources are. And you should be able to list them down. You should be able to chase them down from there, but most of it's under the student resources. And just a tip for anybody, if you want to bypass the main page of QCAT.org, go to www.qcat.org/student.php, and that will get you straight onto the student resources page.
So I want to clarify for Chapter 1, the labs don't have it open at the moment, but with the exception of the Google Earth lab, anything else in the labs folder is doable?
You will find that all of the labs that have been modified have been placed in a folder called Chapter 1, and you can read through those modified labs, and they are doable. So any of the labs floating out in the root folder haven't been modified yet, but the ones that are sitting away in Chapter 1, Chapter 2, Chapter 3, Chapter 4, they have been modified by yours truly to be doable.